Welcome to Thinking Out Loud, the podcast that puts you inside conversations with the most deeply passionate, intensely dedicated, and yes, the most thoughtful people in our industry. So sit back and stay tuned. They may just change the way you think.
Hello, I'm Vicki Lins, President and CEO of CTAM, a marketing organization centered in the media entertainment technology industry. Today, I'm here speaking with Marcian Jenks, President of Xumo, and also Managing Director of Comcast Advertising, which includes Effective and Freewheel. So you have lots of free time on your hands these days.
Lots of free time. I get to work on a lot of fun things.
Thank you for joining us. So there's a lot to talk about. So why don't we start with a level set? Give us an overview of Xumo.
I think when I talk about Xumo, the best way to think about the business is we're about engaging audiences and monetizing those audiences. And the way we do that is in four different paths. The first is we have what essentially is a new streaming device, an IP streaming device, a Xumo Streambox. And we work with operators to distribute those Xumo Streamboxes to their subscribers as a way to drive streaming engagement and to ultimately monetize those audiences. We also do that through televisions. We work with a bunch of TV manufacturers to put our software on TVs and again, drive consumer engagement with streaming content and then monetize those customers. And then we do that also through the distribution of FAST channels, which we do in two different ways. We have a product called the Xumo Play, which has 300 plus FAST channels and is available on any type of device. That's free ad supported content and a variety of different kind of flavors that, again, the goal is to drive consumer engagement and monetize those customers. And then we do that through our enterprise business where we power FAST channels in other people's experiences. And so this is, you buy a device that's not necessarily carrying our operating system, but has a selection of FAST channels available into it. And we provide a subset of those channels in those experiences. So if today you watch the Roku channel, as an example, you'll have some Xumo channels in that. If you watch LG FAST channels, or if you watch Samsung FAST channels, you'll again have some of our content. And across all those four things, whether it's our IP streaming boxes, whether it's a television, whether it's our own FAST channels, or we're powering them from somebody else, what we're trying to do is engage consumers as much as possible and then monetize those consumers through advertising.
So let's start with the consumer.
Sure.
Help us understand the friction points that Xumo is going to address for consumers and the value that Xumo's bringing to the marketplace in that space.
So there's three really important trends that we try to address. The first is consumers have a preference for live television. 60% of all consumption is live channels in all of their different forms across a bunch of different platforms. And that's where our FAST channel offering comes in. We power FAST channels for content providers and help them reach consumers to drive that engagement and satisfy that consumer need for a lean back or live experience. So that's kind of a core component of what we do. Within our devices, whether it's the Streambox or the television, we have a broader operating system that solves two consumer problems. The first is helping them figure out what it is that they want to watch. How many of us have had the experience where we heard about some show and need to track it down? So we search for it on our phone and then try to find the app that has that particular show. That's complicated and it's a hurdle that a consumer needs to figure out how to navigate. And we do that for them by flattening that discovery process, by making it easy to integrate all the metadata into a single unified search, by making it available through voice and helping put that consumer in front of the content they want to watch as quickly and as easily as possible. The second consumer friction point is around managing all their subscriptions. And that's something that we're beginning to get in the business of helping to solve for them, giving them a subscription management tool that's part of the operating system that allows them to turn on and off different subscriptions to different content so that they can find the experience that they want as easily as possible.
And how is Xumo different than some of the other platform solutions that are out there? Roku, Amazon, some of the others that have taken that portal approach to helping consumers get into their space, curate their space.
Yeah, I think in some of the ways that I just described, so we are much more live TV focused. We have this concept in our operating system of a primary video service that puts a consumer in front of a live offering almost from the start and kind of leans into that lean back behavior. It doesn't get in the way from them to find other on-demand content that they want, but it makes it easier for them to access that live lean back experience. So that's different than what other people do. The second thing is the discovery piece. We follow shows first to wherever, whatever app or experience those shows live in. And so you think about, you know, a popular show like Survivor, there's 40 plus seasons of Survivor, and they're scattered across a bunch of different content services. We make it easy for a consumer to find the specific season of Survivor that they want, wherever it's shown, favoring the content that that subscriber already has a subscription to. So kind of ways to watch that are free to them, but just giving them a way to discover the show, whatever service it happens to be on.
So you mentioned engagement earlier. Let's talk about scale for a minute. This is a joint venture between Comcast and Charter, but there have been other announcements. Mediacom just recently came out with an announcement that they're going to be offering Xumo.
Yeah.
Where are we in the deployment timeline of reaching everyone?
There's two ways to look at it. Across all the ways we serve consumer, we reach a lot of people, maybe not everybody. But again, remember, we certainly have the devices where we distribute the operating system. And that's, I think, what you're really asking about.
Yeah.
And then we live on other people's devices as well. And in aggregate, we try to reach as many consumers as possible, which is important from a monetization perspective.
Right.
But in terms of our operating system, we've made a lot of progress. We've been in the market for only a little bit over a year and work with multiple television manufacturers and, as you mentioned, multiple operators. But it's still early days. When you think about it, our very first Xumo stream box launched on October 3rd with Charter of last year. And so we are, by that measure, just 6 months into the kind of overall distribution and are already in millions of devices in aggregate across Charter, Comcast, and increasingly other operators. We've only announced three operators at this point, but our roadmap has us announcing a lot more, and we continue to work across the industry to try to bring a solution that embraces changing consumer behavior. Historically, operators thought in the context of distributing their own content bundle that they created themselves in a traditional cable package. And increasingly, consumers are putting together their own bundles across apps and fast channels, and sometimes big bundles and sometimes skinny bundles from the operator. And our goal is to put all those things in one place, easily accessible and manageable by the consumer.
So you've got momentum at this point.
For certain.
That's exciting.
We feel very good about that. And that's also the case on the device side for televisions. We've announced so far partnerships with Pioneer, Hisense, Element, and our expectation is that we'll be announcing other TV manufacturers as well. And the same goes for retailers, where we've sold TVs in partnership with Walmart, with Best Buy, and a few regional retailers. And you will see that list expanding over the course of this year as well.
Let's circle back to monetization. Mm-hmm. How does the landscape look in terms of hitting critical mass to be able to effectively monetize this platform?
There's kind of two elements to that story. The first is that we do have, in and of itself, within Xumo, across all of our touch points, our own operating system, and when we live on third-party devices. And so we have scale, and we have a lot of impressions to monetize.
Yes.
And we feel great about where we are and the momentum on that front. But in addition to that, we also have the partnership with Comcast and Charter and other operators that have their own sales force. And we make our inventory available to them to sell on either a partnership or a rep basis. And that gives us access to local demand and a sales force that has additional scale beyond what we bring to the table. Increasingly, marketers are interested in buying audiences independent of what screen those audiences are watching on, whether it's a traditional cable bundle on a TV or whether it's a Xumo Play impression on a device or it's a Xumo Enterprise impression on somebody else's device, we have the ability to kind of put all of those together to deliver a unified audience for a marketer and try to tap into as much scale as we possibly can.
It's actually really layered. So there's different paths to monetizing the content.
It really is. It does create some challenges. We're very careful about managing channel conflict and keeping the lanes as clear as possible. So for example, when we sell an impression in a local market, we tend to lean into the operator sales force that specialized on that front. Whereas on a national basis, maybe we sell more in programmatic channels directly and through agencies via other third-party sales forces. So there's a way that we kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together in order to maximize the value of the inventory that we create.
So you have relationships with content providers, with the networks. Mm-hmm. They've got national ad sales teams selling their inventory. Is there a conflict that happens in the marketplace now that you're selling inventory as well at scale beyond local?
There is a little bit on the margin, but we tend to manage it, again, reasonably well. So it is fairly common in the FAST space that the enablers of FAST channels, companies like Xumo, and there are others that are out there, will take a portion of the inventory as in compensation for enabling the FAST channel and the ability to reach a particular audience. And so it's a common practice today, not unlike what networks have historically had with cable companies, mm-hmm. where the same impressions are available in kind of different channels. What we tend to do in partnership with our programmers is try to work through the best ways of monetizing those impressions. Sometimes the network will monetize all of it and just rev share back to us. Sometimes each of us monetizes our piece. And sometimes we will monetize more than our share on behalf of the network because we might have assets like the ability to decorate the impression with specific data that distinguishes us in the marketplace and allows us to secure better monetization than what the network might be able to do on its own.
It's a delicate dance.
It is. But it's not unlike what we've historically had in the cable industry between right. programmers and distributors. So it's a known problem and one that we've been fairly adept at managing historically and are able to manage on a go-forward basis.
So let's talk about distribution. With the networks, this is a different type of relationship that's layered in on top of or in addition to other distribution deals for where their content is carried. Has that been complex and challenging, or has this been a bit more seamless than we might expect because it's just a new channel of opportunity?
It's been an interesting evolution, and it continues to change. What I would say is that from a streaming perspective, there are four ways that a traditional network distributes their content. And we participate in one way or another in all four of them. There's a traditional way, which is they're part of a cable bundle, and that cable bundle is available on a streaming app on a Xumo device. And so that's the most traditional industry type of distribution, an extension of what used to be Title VI content package. There is a direct-to-consumer app that a network might have, which they sell directly to consumer, which we now enable. And that is coexisting, and it's ever-evolving between a programmer and a traditional cable operator where their content might be available in two experiences. For example, it might be available in an Xfinity Stream or Spectrum TV app and on a Peacock app or a Paramount Plus app that's on a particular device.
So if I'm the consumer, Xumo would give me both. If I had both, if I had a cable package and I subscribed to Paramount Plus separately, I could access both equally on my Xumo.
That's right. And okay. In the case of, for example, a Charter deal with Disney that includes a Disney Plus streaming access as part of a traditional Title VI offering, we help aggregate the content that's available across the two experiences in a seamless way for a consumer. And that is increasingly one of the trends that you see in the types of deals that networks and cable companies are cutting with each other.
I think that's probably increasingly a point of distinction as well, because that seamless integration has been missing.
I think that's right. And that's one of the things where we want to make it easy for the consumer to find the content wherever it is, not have them figure out where it is first and then go search for it. I mentioned there were four. There's two other ways that kind of we distribute network content. So there's increasingly this concept of a channel store, which is where we ingest the content that is offered by a network as part of an incremental bolt-on subscription. Think about this as the way cable companies used to distribute HBO, but increasingly in the streaming world, aggregators are distributing smaller cable network content. So for example, today you can be an Amazon Prime subscriber, and within the Amazon channel store, you can subscribe to Max or to Paramount or to Showtime or to different types of network content. And increasingly, that's a capability that we are able to offer as well. And then the final one is through fast channels, where it might not be the full portfolio of content, but it's still valuable content that can engage and entertain a consumer and can be available both live and on demand for us to distribute across a variety of different platforms.
So the algorithm prioritizes consumer experience. So it will feed me content that I either actively watch or that it believes I'd be interested in watching based on prior viewing history.
That's right.
Are the partnerships with the networks evolving content promotion in different and interesting ways? Because one of the friction points there is this proliferation of content, and great stuff may never get dangled in front of consumers if they're not watching something of that genre or something that the algorithm recognizes. So consumers are frustrated because they may not be finding everything that they really truly would love. And networks are frustrated because their content might not be getting bubbled up. What is the Xumo approach in that space look like?
Well, we very much optimize against the consumer experience the way that you described in the manners that you described. There's one more that I'll add into the mix, which is our ways to watch algorithm prioritized content that is free to the consumer or that they already subscribe to. So to the degree that they have subscription that they've enabled on our platform, that way to watch is surfaced in a priority way. So again, the goal is to connect a consumer to content that they've chosen or that makes sense for them as easily and as seamlessly as possible. The other thing that we've done is created promotional mechanism that allows us to kind of surface content discovery through a couple of different mechanisms. One is algorithmically. You've watched this, so you're likely to like this. Not dissimilar to what Netflix and other platforms have historically been doing. There's another way, which is editorially. We still believe that there's value in a curated experience. There's a time of the week where an important sports event is happening, like women's national NCAA title game on Sunday. And you want to promote that and make it as easily as possible for people to find it in order to keep the service as relevant to them as it possibly can be. So there's kind of editorial promotion. And then, yes, there's also a mechanism for paid promotion. somebody's launching a new show. It's like what we historically have known as a tune-in category in advertising, where they say, boy, I'd like people to come and watch my show. I'm going to invest in making them aware of it so that they can drive usage and kind of viewership to it. And we enable that as well across our platforms as other platforms do.
There's lots of talk about the new bundles and the next generation of bundles. And so from Xumo's perspective, and I guess also tapping into your experience running Comcast advertising, what does bundling 2.0 start to look like when you have a vehicle like Xumo in the mix?
Yeah, and I'm glad you started there. I think the value of a vehicle like Xumo is it allows you to piece together different subscriptions and ways to watch content into a unified value proposition that's seamless to the consumer. And so I do think it involves different types of content accessed and almost discovered in different ways in one unified experience. And so what are the ingredients? So I think fast channels are like the new broadcast. Remember, broadcasts used to be free over the air, ad-supported TV. Well, that sounds a lot like a fast channel. And I think increasingly we're finding there's a strong analogy between the two. And so that's a baseline of content that's available to everybody. And we want to make it as easily discoverable, as engageable, as consumable as possible. But then on top of that, a consumer wants to add their own subscriptions. So those come in two forms. They come in the kind of channel store perspective. You know, I'm a really big fan of AMC, and there's a service called AMC Plus, and that AMC Plus service has been ingested and is made available kind of within a broader experience. So I want to be able to pay a monthly fee and subscribe to that. Or I have a subscription to Netflix or some other major direct-to-consumer app that I want to layer on top of my free content, and I have the ability to kind of consume that as well. And so the reality is when you piece together those three things with a cable bundle, whether it be a traditional bundle or a skinny bundle, it's those four categories of content that you're piecing together to create your own experience. And what's determining what mix of those four components somebody has tends to be their price point that they can afford. So it's driven by consumer behavior. I have $50 of disposable income this month in order to fund my entertainment needs. So what mix of the things that I just described am I going to spend my $50 on? Or I have $100 and maybe I make a different set of choices. Or I'm a sports nut and maybe I make a different set of choices. Or I'm a home improvement nut and I make a different set of choices. But I think no matter what, you're choosing between those four buckets of content, traditional cable packages, either in skinny or full format, content store, direct-to-consumer apps, or kind of free ad-supported content in a fast channel.
So you touched on price, which is, as we know, a big driver of consumer choice.
Yeah, it has to be, of course.
CTAM just completed the first wave of a two-part study on consumer preferences around streaming and viewing behavior.
Yeah, it's a budget allocation exercise.
And so the only missing piece to everything you just said would beg the question, is it possible we'll see some sort of critical mass discount or special customer discount layered into some kind of Xumo bundle?
Yeah.
And is that something that's coming? And
we do that today to a limited extent. And our vision is that we would continue to do that. When I talk about the subscription management platform component, it's very much that. It's you could see a situation where somebody says, you know, subscribe to one service and it's $7.99 a month, but subscribe to three services and it's $15. And kind of the bundles are built in. Now, part of that comes down to our own incentives for creating those value propositions for consumers and subsidizing them. And part of that comes down to our negotiations with the networks around what's available. And the reality is that both will contribute to the value to the consumer.
That's an interesting space because the networks are facing retention issues. Churn is,
and a high cost for customer acquisition.
Right.
They're facing forces in the marketplace that they didn't have to face in the olden days of cable distribution where the cable company managed that for them.
Right. Well, and it's interesting how quickly research gets outdated, right? You know, it wasn't that long ago that the research was saying that the threshold for consumers was 5, maybe 6 streaming services, but that's when the streaming services were smaller and were $5.99 a month, not $19.99 a month. And so the threshold has changed dramatically in that short window of time. And now people are saying 2, maybe 3 streaming services is my threshold, and managing them becomes more complicated. So I would imagine that there's a huge opportunity there to work with the services very differently to get them in front of consumers, but to keep those consumers.
I think that there is for certain. And especially when you think about the operators and what also drives their business is today, most operators are measured by their ability to drive broadband subscribers and broadband consumption. And what's the number one activity that drives broadband consumption is video consumption across streaming services. And so they're an active partner in this process as well. And I think that's part of what Charter has been able to achieve with some of the deals that they've created in the marketplace is they've recognized the ability to deliver value to consumers by bundling subscription to apps together with traditional cable bundles and kind of optimizing against consumer desire at a particular price point.
So we may end up editing this part out, but CTAM's doing a lot of work in that space because when you look at our membership, we exist at the intersection of the broadband streaming universe. And so just last week, we were looking at this new research, but also looking at the work streams that we've executed in this space, talking about the next generation. And Xumo was being batted all over the place in that conversation because you do bring so many different pieces of answers to that space that have been challenging for people to work together. Until now.
Yeah, I think that was the vision when Tom Rutledge and Dave Watson put their heads together and said, let's create this entity. It was with an eye toward what the future of content consumption was going to look like.
Yeah. So let's just talk a little bit about brand. It's been interesting to me that almost every answer that you've given has been, well, there are 2 paths or 3 paths or 4 points, or that each piece of the business comes with various aspects to it. Nothing is simple.
Yeah.
And so when you roll all of that up, what's the Xumo brand proposition? What does Xumo stand for in the marketplace that will help the business gain traction with consumers and with other partners that will build value?
So the way we drive value with consumers is by helping them engage with the content that they love. No matter where they are, whether on our experience or somebody else's, we help them engage with the content that they love in ways that are unique and differentiated from what they can do in other places. There is a side of this, though, that's also our value proposition to advertisers, because that's ultimately how we make money. And for advertisers, we give them the broadest scale from a streaming perspective because we live not just in the experiences where we power the operating system, but we also live on third-party experiences and can help them reach their audiences there. And so it's a two-sided coin. It's we need consumers first, so let's do right by consumers because that's the way we grow our audience. And then once we've been able to aggregate and engage these audiences, we bring a proposition to marketers. And for them, it's the ability to deliver real scale.
So Xumo versus Roku or Xumo versus Apple.
Yeah.
What does that look like? How do you boil that down to get people to go, oh, okay, I get it and I want it?
So from a consumer perspective, what we do is make it easier for you to reach the content that you love. We do that better than Roku. We do that better than Apple. We do that in a way that's differentiated in some of the ways that I described: easier access to live content, easier discovery, easier way to get into the content that you subscribe to and an easier way to subscribe to that content over time. So that's our consumer value proposition. And I think it's proven to be compelling. In a short amount of time, we've gotten a huge amount of traction based on our ability to deliver on that. And we believe we can continue that momentum and continue to grow our audiences that way. From an advertiser perspective, we bring you the broadest reach across all the different streaming platforms in all the way that we help you reach consumers. So we don't yet have the biggest installed base from an operating system perspective, but we reach audiences on other people's experiences as well. And collectively, that gives us a scale to be relevant, to help a marketer find the audience that they're looking for.
All of the different dynamics at play here are fascinating. You mentioned earlier for network partners, Zoomer basically is a marketing vehicle.
Sure.
And not that long ago, it would have meant cross-channel, and that would have reached everybody who had that service. Now you can actually reach the people who are most likely to engage with and enjoy your content. You know, it's all so much more targeted and fluid than it used to be. So every aspect of this business, in my mind, comes with multiple dimensions of new value and new opportunity.
It does, and it requires scale across all sides. And we are still early days on that front, but again, with a huge amount of traction that gives me a tremendous amount of optimism thinking about the business going forward.
So that's a great segue to what's next? What else? What's coming?
Well, we've talked a little bit about what's next, which is this ability to kind of manage your subscriptions in a more seamless way than is otherwise available today. And so that, to me, is a big part of the value proposition, in part because of one of the things that you said, this ability of kind of creating these synthetic bundles of content that can include discounts and benefits to the user. So that, for certain, is a piece of it. But there are others, two others that I'll mention. We think of Zumo as an entertainment platform. And so far, we've been talking in the context of entertainment in the traditional sense as kind of network and content and shows. And it is that. I don't want to minimize that. That's a critical part of the proposition going forward. But when you look at consumer behavior, entertainment is also changing in definition. And so increasingly, a big part of the population we're trying to reach spends a huge amount of their time gaming. And so ours is a platform that can deliver gaming to a user in the same way that it delivers content to a user, because gaming is content to that user. And so increasingly, our platform has the capability of syncing to controllers and offering to a user a value proposition of engaging in a game in the same way that we do engaging with a piece of content. So that's one of the things that's coming. The same type of thing I would say for music. It's a well-known secret in cable that music distribution is a big part of the business that industry has been in for a long time through companies like Music Choice and Stingray. And we think there is a significant opportunity to aggregate and make discovery of music easier on a platform than it has been historically. So in the same way that we've flattened discovery for content and make it easier for somebody to get to their show quicker, in measurable minutes quicker than what they can do today, we believe that same proposition is available in music, and that'll be a big part of our future as well.
That almost starts to sound like this could eventually evolve into a lifestyle portal, maybe even potentially beyond entertainment.
There's experimentation that Comcast has done with a product like Sky Live in the UK that includes things like fitness and those kinds of things. I think about it aspirationally as we want to control the heart of the home. We want to be, we're in the biggest screen in the home, in the center of the home. We want to make life easier and more enjoyable for a consumer by connecting them to the things that they love, no matter what that is. And so you can think about it in that way. Mm-hmm. What else could come next on that list? And the future is almost limitless. But there's a certain effort at this, which is let's prioritize the things that are most relevant, most important, that are going to drive the needle the most today. And those are probably the things that I mentioned.
The future is really It's really exciting. I mean, from a consumer perspective, from a business perspective, no matter how I look at this, I get really jazzed by all the opportunity at hand. It would be a complete waste to sit and speak with someone like you without tapping into some of your experience and talking about leadership for just a minute. You are running two large businesses for Comcast and Comcast Charter with Xumo and with Comcast Advertising. What does it look like for you to have one foot in each of those businesses and to be leading such a vast swath of business and opportunity?
Well, I think part of the reason I have the privilege of being involved in both is that they're very tightly related. So there is value to my role as the head of Xumo to be involved in the advertising business. And there's value to my role as the head of the advertising business to be on the forefront of the evolution of content consumption with consumers. And there's a decision that I make early on with my bosses, Chris and Rich and Sam and Dave, where I talk to them about how I allocate my time between the two. And then I kind of manage carefully to that to make sure I'm not kind of cheating either of the businesses in terms of the focus. But there's a lot of thematic overlap that allows me to do both jobs kind of better by virtue of being involved in the other than I otherwise would be able to do.
What does it look like now in this role with this joint venture and that juggling act?
I think it's always tricky, and there are successful ones and less successful ones. And I think a big part of what drives to success is alignment. I think if folks are clear on what it is we're trying to do and how it is we're trying to do it, it's much easier to get alignment between the various partners in a joint venture and to preserve that alignment, and sometimes to diffuse the misalignment. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I pride myself on doing is identifying and addressing what the friction points are, because I think that's ultimately what's going to lead to success or failure. Mm-hmm. And so we spend a lot of time as a board talking about where the partners are aligned and where we aren't and how we can get alignment in some of those places. I've said this a couple of times, but I am super optimistic about the progress we have made and what's ahead of us, because I think there is a huge amount of alignment in terms of what we're trying to do and a huge opportunity to create a real entertainment, broadly defined national brand that can serve consumers in ways that the rest of the industry is not yet doing.
What's most important from you for this organization and for all the people who work in this organization to be able to be successful? How do you define your role as a leader?
Yeah, there's two components of it. The first is, I think any good leader is clear on the objectives that we're pursuing. So it's kind of making sure everybody understands where it is we're trying to get. I think that is missing in organizations that aren't successful and is consistent across organizations that are. So that's a big component of it. And then the next thing that I try to do is identify what are the things that are functionally getting in the way of realizing that vision and then taking those on very aggressively. Early in my career, I had the privilege of managing a small, at the time, venture-backed startup. And when a company's success or failure depends on removing the clear set of obstacles that are in the way, it's immensely clarifying. You want to attack those as aggressively as you possibly can, and nobody ever complains that they kind of moved too fast on that front.
How much does your entrepreneurial experience play into your current roles?
I think a big part.
It sounds to me like it would be actually very meaningful in this role.
I've been in big companies and small companies, but in both, I've always tried to be a change agent. My perspective is that part of the way we create and kind of build a legacy is to do something that hasn't been done before and to push people out of their comfort zones. And that's what it takes to drive real change. And if you don't drive change, then ultimately you run the risk of kind of withering and dying. And I think that's a legitimate risk in the industry and something we're trying to prevent from happening. There's a lot of change that's happening, and that change creates opportunity, and opportunity requires entrepreneurship. And I think we try to, as an organization, embody that and be a driver and push.
So I'll just pull a few of your words and use them to wrap up our conversation, and that is that change creates opportunity. And since we're sitting here in the middle of an industry that's going through arguably unparalleled change and transformation, I think it's really important for everyone to remember how much opportunity that brings. As we get buried in being overwhelmed on a day-to-day basis about how much is changing and evolving around us, there is opportunity to be found everywhere.
Totally right. And there's something an investor that I had once said to me, which I think goes very much kind of in line with that, which is that successful entrepreneurs have the ability to see a possibility for the future that not everybody else sees. And I think that's the kind of optimism and the opportunity that we have to pursue. The fact that you could look at the landscape of the industry and say, be overwhelmed by the change that's happening. Or you could say, wait, what opportunities does this create based on the way that consumers are interacting with the content and entertainment experiences that they love? And then how can we go and solve for that opportunity and create real value for them? And if you serve a consumer well, then for every one of your stakeholders altogether.
Thank you for giving us a glimpse of what that looks like from your perspective today. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, same here.
Hope you found this Thinking Out Loud conversation interesting and perhaps even thought-provoking. There are more on the way. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.